Everything you know about health is about to change. Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Sometimes people suffer not from lack of faith, but from lack of knowledge. This is the show that changes that. If you are tired of being sick, tired of not getting answers, tired of spinning in circles, for healing is not a mystery. It is a miracle that you were designed to experience. It takes hard work and real knowledge. It takes patience and time. It takes the education this show can provide. So, get it straight today. Here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning, my friends. Dr. Vincent Medici, here to serve. Yes, I am here to serve you in a radical way. The theme of 2019 is radical. What do I mean? I mean, we have to understand that if you do radical things for your health, they really work. Otherwise, you're left hanging. I've been in this game for 25 years. I've done everything there is to do and more. And I can tell you right now, the standard practice, the standard health practice, the things most people do that they think is going to give them radiant health, in the end, it just doesn't cut it. Now, that doesn't mean it's not a good thing to do. It doesn't mean that there's not benefit to it. But after you hit 60, the genetics kicks in. Everybody's coded. Everybody knows that there's something in your genes that predisposes you towards ultimately what you're going to get later on in life, what you're going to die of, what you're going to get sick of. And you already know the story. You go parading into the hospital, talk to your doctor about your cancer or your Parkinson's or your Alzheimer's or whatever you get. And you ask your doctor, well, what can I do for it? And the doctor says, well, just take the drug, do the surgery. And you look at him like, well, there's got to be more. Can't I do something? Can't I do a cleanse? Can't I take a supplement? Isn't nutrition part of this? Isn't there something I can do for me? And they say, look, it's in your genetics. Now, your doctor's right and your doctor's wrong. And this is what you have to understand about radical steps for your health. Your doctor's right in that you have a genetic predisposition. Now, what they don't tell you in holistic schools, chiropractic schools and acupuncture schools and naturopathic schools and this, that, and the other type of school, herbal schools, what they don't tell you, and what therefore your holistic doctors, your holistic therapists don't really understand, is that against the ravage of time and your genetic predisposition, when you start coming down with that disease at 60, 65, or 70, those supplements aren't going to get you there. The typical health practice isn't going to get you there. And this is why I've coined the term radical health. Now, I didn't want to get there. I didn't want to go to this point because nobody wants to get radical about their health. Everybody's got their list of priorities, and what you do for your health really isn't at the top of the list. It's really not, and that's the way we are right now. So you do everything you can possibly do to give people a real change in the course of their health without getting radical. And I got to tell you, after 25 years of banging my head into the wall, it just doesn't work. Most doctors could put on two hands the number of people that they've seen really cure. And that's if they're good doctors. I'm talking about the holistic crowd. Most doctors, if they're going to be honest, which generally they don't like to do when it comes to this subject, but most people, when they get sick, when they get cancers, when they get heart disease, when they get autoimmune disease, when they're up for joint replacements, when you have Parkinson's on the way, Alzheimer's, most doctors don't see. A lot of people get on the other side of that. Which is why most people generally go to the hospital, do what the doctor says. You do the drugs, you do the surgery, you manage the disease, and you hope for the best. And that's what your medical community tells you. Some of us turn to the alternative healthcare community. Naturopaths, acupuncturists, chiropractors, massage therapists, yoga therapists, this, that, the other thing. And they want, well, what do they want? Most of them want a cure. You got to understand that. You got to be honest with yourself. Doctors have to be honest with themselves. Most people that come in and ask for help at early onset Alzheimer's, early onset Parkinson's, early onset cancer, early onset heart disease, early onset rheumatoid arthritis, psoriatic arthritis, scleroderma, so on and so forth, lupus. Your doctor says, look, we might have to replace your knee or your hip or your shoulder, but we could do it in 5 years, but let's do it now while you're young. That's what they tell you. And most people in those situations, when they want an alternative choice, they want cure. They don't want to be helped. They want to know that the time, the money, the effort they put in to finding an alternative worked completely. I got to tell you something. The statistics are not impressive. And I don't care what the marketing campaigns in the holistic community make you think. I don't care what testimonials they put on, all these pictures of smiling patients and their websites. It's all marketing mumbo jumbo. And yet, now here's the other side. Here's the side of optimism. And yet, every doctor worth his salt, her salt, every doctor that works hard will see along the way in a 5, 10, 15, 20, 30, 40-year career, will see people do the impossible. People cure. People do what no one thought they could do. That's all true. That's all true. But what do all those people have in common? If you put all those people together in one room and you gathered together all those doctors that were part of it, what would all those people have in common? They got radical. Okay? Now that's the truth. You want to hear the truth? I just told you the truth. So you can light a candle in the darkness, and that's okay. If all you can afford is a supplement to GNC, or all you're prepared to do is find some cheap supplement at some health food store, and that's the best you can do because it's on sale, well then fine. But we want to proceed on clear terms. We want to understand the contract here. And if you're thinking you signed a contract to get cured, to cure yourself of a degenerative disease, you have to get radical. So today's show, show 403, I'm going to give you the top five things that you can do for cognitive function to make sure you don't go senile. I'm going to give them to you. And we'll do that over the next 25 minutes. And then later on, get on the website. That's straighttalk.cc, soon to be radicalhealthsolutions.net. But right now, get on straighttalk.cc later on and listen to my more comprehensive show. Then I can pound home more of the science, more of the technical stuff. And you can add both shows together and sort of get the easygoing show and the more detailed show. So I give you choices. The top five radical steps for better cognitive function. Number one, you have to regulate your insulin and your blood sugar. We already know Alzheimer's is at least 50-60%. Those beta amyloid plaques of Alzheimer's, and we can add just general senility into that. It's just a different side of the same coin. Or just your memory slowed up over the years. Insulin that runs high because you eat too many cheap carbs and your blood sugar's up too often and your glycated hemoglobin is too high is a killer of what? It's a killer of brain cells. In what sense? It causes plaque in the brain. Plaque. That means high insulin, product of high blood sugar, is a pro-inflammatory agent, meaning high insulin creates an immune system response that lays down the deposition of a lot of scar tissue called fibrin. And that fibrin, right, the same fibrin that clots your blood is the same fibrin that gets laid down in the brain when the insulin's high. And so your tiny blood vessels to the brain all start plugging up with thick blood and thick layers of fibrin. So the brain cells, the neurons, don't get their juice. It's kind of simple, isn't it? Plug yourself up and you suffer in the brain. A radical decrease in the amount of oxygen and nutrient that your neurons, your brain cells, are going to need, because the brain is the most metabolically active part of your body. All right, that's common sense, right? So you go to your doctor and your doctor tells you you don't have diabetes. This is the problem. We're not talking about diabetes. I didn't say the first radical step is to make sure you're not diabetic. I didn't say that. I said to make sure that you're regulating your insulin and your blood sugar at low levels, which means keep your blood sugar under 100 all the time. All the time. Wake up with it at 80. Go to bed with it at 80. 1 hour after you eat your foods, make sure it doesn't go above 110. Or the foods you ate were too pro-inflammatory. Make sure your glycated hemoglobin is no more than like a 5. We start getting nervous around 5.6, 5.7. Yours ought to be a 5. A 4.8's even better. So from your glycated hemoglobin to low insulin levels, which you should have measured, and I won't get into that on this part of the show, and then regulating your blood sugar at about 80 to 90, and postprandial, meaning 1 hour after any meal, it should be under 110, really under 100. It's called becoming a little more ketogenic, and I hate to use that term now, or ketosis or ketogenic, because it's all getting slaughtered. So let's stay away from those terms. But you have to know in your experience, my good friends, you have to know in your experience what it is to function in a regulated state. When you start bringing those numbers up, the blood sugars, the glycated hemoglobins, the insulin, it'll make you feel plugged. You have to know the joy, the pleasure of living with those numbers under 100. There's a distinct difference between living unregulated or dysregulated and with low numbers. It's a very distinct feeling in your body. One of the problems you have when your insulin runs too high from cheap carbs or too much carbs or whatever it is that doesn't work for you, one of the problems is you lay down glycation end chain products, which just really are about stickiness in your body. It plugs everything up. That's the best way to say it. Listen, you know what I'm talking about. Over the holiday, right? People go off their diets. They eat everything in sight. You know, it's the holidays. What are you going to do? Say no to grandma's apple pie? So everybody stuffs their face. And what happens that first week or two after the new year? You feel stuffed, sticky, and congested. That's what I'm talking about. People live like that. Don't. You want to live the other way. So this is sensory. This is something you've got to feel. And if you do that, you have taken one radical step. Now, why do I call that radical? Go find people that do that. It's 1 in 100. Even less. People don't live that way. That's why these paleo movements and these ketogenic movements and the caveman diet thing and the rest of it, these are all great moves. This isn't a fad. The ketogenic state is not a fad. It's going to stick around forever. And of course, we mire it. We mess it up with these discussions about should we be vegetarian or should we eat animal products. It doesn't matter whether you're vegetarian, raw food, cooked food, Chinese food, Persian food, who cares? Eat whatever you want. Make sure your blood sugar runs at about 80 to 90 all day long. Make sure your glycated hemoglobin is under 5.4, preferably all the way down to 4.8. Don't live with glycated hemoglobin up at, 5.4, 5.5, 5.6, just at the borderline, and everybody says you're fine. You're not fine. Do that. That's radical. See, it's not so bad. All right, here's number two. Get on the website, straighttalk.cc. Listen to any of my shows on stretching, any of my shows on the cranial rhythms, any of my shows on head trauma, and understand probably the single most radical thing that you can do that's not so radical. Here's number two. Get cohesion, in other words, flow, dynamic motion between your occipital bone, your first cervical vertebra, and your second cervical vertebra. This is what is eliminated as you age and your head starts moving forward. Take a picture of yourself, look at your wedding picture, and look at yourself now at 60. Male or female, from the side, and notice how far forward your head has come. That's the end of brain function. We call it aging. We call it normal. We call it the Dowager's hump. We lose bone and our head comes forward. All unnecessary, all fixable, but you got to get radical. This is so important. Motion, dynamic motion, fluidity between the occipital bone. If you take your hand and you swat yourself on the back of the head like you killed a mosquito that was biting the back of your head, that's the occipital bone. Below that is your first cervical vertebra. Below that is your second cervical vertebra. If you give that deference, meaning if you learn to stretch those places out so that you get a release when you do it, meaning a good feeling, meaning some sense of like relaxation, it means you're beginning to open up those joint spaces. Once those joint spaces fuse, as your head moves forward, you lose brain function. Your brain can no longer pump with respect to your sacrum, which is another place you're losing function. The craniosacral pump, the craniosacral rhythm, dies. Now, you can't afford to have that happen 10% or 20% or 30%. You have to have that functioning like it was functioning when you were an infant. And you can, and you must. But then go ahead. Look at yourself in your wedding picture, and look at yourself now from the side, side view. And look at male or female after 60, after 70, 75, 80, how far that head is shifted forward. And you say, well, what can I do about it? Do you know that's what stretching is supposed to address? So go to show 243, go to show 244 on the site, and really dig in and listen to those shows. I'm trying to tell you something. I think I've done generally an average, mediocre job. I'm constantly repeating myself. Some of my listeners can't even take it. Oh, I have heard about this before. No, you haven't, because you haven't done it. No, you haven't, because you don't really understand it. I teach this to doctors. They don't understand it. They nod their heads like they do, but they don't. You have to do it. Stretching is an art form. Go back and listen to those shows, and you have to get sophisticated. You have to master the isolations. An isolation is an advanced form of stretch. It's not like bend down and stretch your hamstrings or stretch your calf muscles. It's not like you can really learn it on a video. You really have to work for it and apply yourself to it. This is so important that the entire profession of chiropractic. Now, I am a chiropractor. I was valedictorian of my class. 1993, Cleveland Chiropractic College on Vermont and Melrose in Los Angeles. Oh, yeah. I'm telling you, The whole profession's devoted towards opening up those joints, upper cervical adjustments, Palmer's hole in one school. I mean, it's all there. Osteopathy's no different. Osteopathy gave enormous focus to those areas. The truth is, you ought to be giving enormous focus to it yourself, on your own, every single day of your life, in multiple events, so that you're constantly pumping your brain, learning to pump your brain. Absolutely critical. Headstand. Headstand. Or an inversion table where someone pulls your neck gently. In other words, using gravity to bring blood to the brain. It's stated in yoga that the single most beneficial pose you can hold is headstand. That means you stand on your head. Now, I don't really recommend this for a lot of people. They don't know how to do it. They're not ready to do it. You have to train yourself to be able to do that. And generally, when you're doing it wrong. But I want to lay it down. Because holding yourself upside down, so yes, an inversion table. An inversion table in the interest of what? An inversion table in the interest of having a response that you can discern. So that if someone said, you know, that inversion table practice of yours, it looks like a bunch of hocus pocus to me. I think you're wasting your time. You need to have an experience with that inversion table to the point where it would be over your dead body that someone would take that inversion table away from you. When your neurologist at the onset of your Parkinson's or senility or Alzheimer's looks at you with his hands crossed and says, an inversion table, you can do it. Don't hurt yourself. But honestly, it's a joke. That you would look at your doctor and say, listen, you are an arrogant fool because you are just not having the experience that I do every day on that inversion table. That's what I'm talking about when I say inversion table. Now, if you get an inversion table and you hang upside down or some variation of that and you don't have a discernible experience with it, you're doing it wrong. If you're in headstand or handstand in a yoga class and you don't have a deep, discernible benefit. Like what? Like your brain clears up. Like you feel like someone went in there with Windex and cleaned out the cobwebs between your ears. Like your memory's better. Like your mind is clearer, sharper. That's what I mean. Discernible. Something you can hang your hat on. Something no one can take away from you in their smugness and condescension. And if you're not having that, cross inversion table and headstand off the list. Or attenuate it. Say, there must be something here because Medici told me that. I'm doing something wrong. And seek and you will find. There's number three. Number four. You have to learn to hit the heart rate over 160 for a half an hour, 3 days a week in intervals, meaning you have to move the blood of the body. There's no getting around this. There's no getting around exercise of intensity. And whether you're doing an elliptical, a Stairmaster, a treadmill, you're walking up a hill, you're climbing the side of a mountain, you're in water. There are just so many wonderful ways to do this. But what people do wrong, I see them at Equinox, at LA Fitness, at 24-Hour Fitness, at their own local gym, always what they're doing is checking out of their body because moving their body is a chore. So there's the guy on the treadmill and he's reading the paper. There's somebody else that's obsessed about his blood pressure while he's doing it. Somebody else is watching a TV. You ever see that? They put all the treadmills there and all the ellipticals, and then in front of that there's a row of like 27 TV sets. Man, that's bad. You're supposed to be listening to your body. How can you listen to your body when you're doing the other things? It really is idiotsville. It's so disrespectful to the whole intention of it. And you're certainly not going to hit a heart rate of 160 watching TV or reading the Wall Street Journal. My friends, I will guarantee you. And always let me remind you, use your common sense. You've got to train to the point. When I say radical, you have to train to get to the point where you can do something radical. If you don't respect that, you're being disrespectful. And you'll pay. You'll suffer. Would you go out and shoot a gun without knowing how to shoot a gun and then be surprised when you blow your fingers off? So you got to get that heart rate for 30 minutes in 30-second intervals up at about 140, 150, 160, 170, three, four times a week. Number five, learn to fast, man. Learn to fast so your body, your cells, will, in a prioritization, push out the garbage that's clogging your brain. You've got to learn to water fast. To be able to say, I got up in the morning, I drank water. That night, I hadn't had a bit of food, just water. And to do that for 3 days, 4 days, to do that every month, 3 to 4 days, to do that in a year, maybe a couple of 7 day water fasts, to induce autophagy. You can't think straight because your neurons, your brain cells, aren't getting nutrition, and the long-term effect of that is damaged brain cells. The only way you repair them, the only way you stimulate regeneration, is to starve the brain, the body, of glucose, of food, to induce autophagy. That's a subject I've gotten into. Check my website for the other fasting shows. Also, 714-850-1007. 714-850-1007. February 24th, Sunday. I've got a few spaces left for that class. Tomorrow's class, I have no space left. We're going to have a ball. Hope to see you guys there. Anyone lost in the labyrinth of health, give my office a call. Come in. Let me set you straight. 714-850-1007. Have a great week.
Okay, that's a wrap. Don't forget to get to Dr. Medici's website at drmedici.com to look at the pictures and review the show as often as you wish. See you next week.
Okay, let's do it. Part two. What a morning. Looked like the end of the world this morning at 6 a.m. Dark gray, nasty, just not pleasant. I prayed for the rain, and then it started to pour. I got to the track, took the clothes off, built the heat, stretched the tendons, hit the hill, built more heat, dove in the ocean, stretched on the beach. Keep building the heat. That's when the endorphins kick in. That's when you're going to have your day made. That's when, even though it's pouring rain, the sun comes out. And then the gift. The rain stops. The clouds are still dark. But we've got this gorgeous blue sky contrasted against the dark gray. And that's what I meant last week's show. You've got to look for these anomalies, these anomalous moments in nature. You got to be ready to experience that. Meaning you got to get yourself turned on so you can receive, because those vibrations are different. And this is not hocus pocus we're talking about here. This isn't that airy fairy stuff. This isn't the hippie movement or the hippie generation. We may not have the equipment to quantify what I'm saying. Science may not have the sophistication to prove what I'm talking about. But it's presumptuous of us and arrogant of us as scientists to think that we're ahead of our senses. We're never going to be ahead of our senses. And if you study the evolution of the Teslas and the Einsteins and the Newtons, they're always behind their senses. In other words, they depend on their senses to tell their analytic mind where to study. You see? That's really the way it works. So when I say to you that I had this kind of a morning, it's my senses that tell me that there's science there. And that's what you have to understand for yourself. And never doubt that. And the longer I spend in science and the more I suffer in science, because it is a suffering. When I finish this show today, I'll open up another genetics textbook and I have to decipher the idiocy in it. And I don't mean it's idiocy. I mean the guy that's explaining it is an idiot. Professors don't write textbooks to explain things to anybody. They don't. They write textbooks because it's a cool thing to do. Maybe you make a little money. Maybe it's part of your resume, your curriculum vitae. It certainly isn't out there in the expressed interest of teaching anybody. And you can really see this on YouTube. I have to go to YouTube and go through a lot of science, often explained in Hindi, which cracks me up. The world has changed. For any young American, the world has changed. More people from India who got that science piece down, and they're explaining it to people who understand Hindi. They usually can't teach for beans. They're giving it a shot, but they can't teach at all. I have to go through hundreds of YouTube clips to find one guy that can explain a topic, and that guy can explain the topic. What'll take me 5 hours takes me 10 minutes if I get one guy to explain it right, and that is the way you're supposed to learn. So science is filled with holes, which is why when I explain to you my sentence, my morning today, and I want you to add that to the show last week, using your senses, when I say, get up in the morning, get to a track, take your clothes off, let the cold air hit you, build your heat, move your blood, stretch your tendons, open your meridians, hit the hill, get the heart rate way up, dive into the ocean, stretch on the beach, and if you're fortunate enough to be near a waterfall, to be in a cave, to be under a rainbow, to be in the rain, to see a dolphin, to talk to a seal, absorb that. That's what your senses can tell you. All right? Enough said. What that does for your brain is beyond belief. Today's show, Radical Steps for Better Cognitive Function. Show 403. My God. There's a YouTube clip on there, Why Do Dogs Yawn? It's laughable what this man and woman are. You know, it makes me laugh because they don't really know what they're talking about in a way. They're missing the whole point, but they are skirting on the truth of it. Watch it with me. Turn it on. Why Dogs Yawn. All right, so they play some stupid music. Move to, let's see.
Did you know that yawning is actually the first expression dogs...
Go to 30 seconds. All right? Go to 30 seconds into the show. Listen to this woman talk.
Learn to use when they're tiny puppies, so it has multiple meanings depending on the situation they're in.
So she's saying that yawning, and we're going to get to this, because you're going to yawn to improve your cognitive function. You're going to learn to yawn to improve your cognitive function. It's not a little thing, that's a big thing. But you've got to yawn like a dog. Or yawn like a cat. Or yawn like a cheetah. Or yawn like a lion. Or a monkey. Or a gorilla. Or a hippopotamus. Or an alligator. Living organisms understand what it is to pull open the temporomandibular joint to pump the cranium. And that's why animals yawn. But you may not be having that experience. Because the cranial plates fibrose, the TMJ joint just fibroses. It locks up bad. And you lose the cranial pump. And you cannot afford to do that. You will degenerate. I could not imagine living without a cranial pump, without a pulling apart of my own temporomandibular joint to the point where I can feel the inside of my brain shift, coupled with the suboccipital release, coupled with the release through the scalenes, coupled with making sure that there's no Dowager's hump forming. The collective effect of all of this is massive as it relates to preventing and reversing neurodegenerative states. Done. All right, listen to her talk about the dog yawning.
Oh, ecstatic joy could be one of these emotions, right?
Well, dogs usually yawn when they want to send a pacifying or calming signal to other dogs or people, like, hey, everybody.
See, she's saying dogs yawn when they want to send a pacifying or calming signal to everybody. No, they don't. She doesn't know what she's talking about. When dogs are yawning, it's because dogs are in a comfortable situation and they want to enjoy it more by intensifying the pleasure of it. Dogs are relaxing when they're yawning. It's not that a dog decides, hey, I'm going to relax, so I want to tell you I'm going to relax. No, that has nothing to do with it. I don't have to be a dog or a dog owner or a veterinarian to tell you that that woman is ass backwards on that one. What animals do when they yawn is find themselves in a situation where they can afford to shift into the parasympathetic flow. And that is one of the structural motions to facilitate that process. Let's continue.
Yawns have no element of fear.
I'm just listening.
It's like the exact opposite of a threat.
I'm going to hop in this YouTube clip and swat this guy in the head.
Dogs yawn when they're getting obedience training. If he's frustrated, he might be asking you to give him a little break.
If I was that dog, I'd rip that guy's fingers off, frankly. Don't treat me like a dog.
Let's move on to the next thing.
All right, the next thing.
Your dog might be cooling off his brain.
Ah, this is what I love. A minute and 18 seconds, your dog may be cooling off his brain. She's on it. She is on it with that one. She's about to tell you that a dog is cooling off its brain. Of course it is. Because that dog is separating, it's changing its cranial frequency, the rate at which the bones move and vibrate. That rate is being enhanced or regulated or moved towards something good for the brain. Done. And it results in a more substantial pumping of that brain. That's huge. That's not a little thing. That is a big thing. So she's kind of got it. She stepped in it. Now listen.
There's a veterinary behaviorist at UC Davis that thinks dog brains get hot during periods of inactivity. It just gets...
Ah, so now we bring in the scientist. Did you hear what she said? Somebody at UC Davis. Some scientist thinks that dogs' brains get hot in periods of inactivity. Duh. I'm sorry to sound this way. It's just so stupid. But why did I put the clip on? It's an incredible contrast to the reality of the animal's mechanism. Not a dog, all animals. And the way we humans, including the scientists, perceive it and yet step in the reality of it, the truth of it, kinda. It's a great clip for that. The vet and the woman are, to some extent, absolutely correct. Of course the brain gets hot. The brain is in a constant situation of trying to regulate itself. And that has a lot to do with temperature. But it's really about how the brain pumps. It excretes. It moves. the ventricles of the brain, the dural tension of the brain, how the ventricles pump and the tone of the dural tissue, which is very connected to the tension in the tendons, which is very connected to your flexibility, all of which are being utilized in confluence to regulate the heat of the brain. The Chinese know this. They say cool head and warm feet, not hot head and cold feet. In adrenal insufficiency, we go to hot head, cold feet. In adrenal exhaustion, we go to cold Dantian, cold kidneys, and hot head. So this is understood through people's senses. I think that's about it.
It's just a So yawning supposedly cools that arterial blood down, helping the dog's brain function.
So I'm either dominating my dog
too
much, or he's having trouble thinking.
Just another moment of this.
There's one other thing.
Dogs yawn when they're dealing with anxiety or uncertainty. Now they're getting hot. They're getting there. That's how a dog relieves its stress. Poor humans. Poor, poor Homo sapien. We have no clue on this. We have no clue. That's a big deal. Opening the TMJ joint. Open that joint. It's one of another set of joints. The other joints that go to picture 10, that occiput, that atlas, and the axis. Those three joints get jammed up. And no better illustration of how they get jammed up than the infamous picture 11. There's your anterior head carriage. This is such a deal that we have something, picture 12, called anterior head syndrome. We know it's not good, and so what do we want to do about it? Well, what we want to do about it is down there in picture 16. We want to hit you with the activator in your TMJ joint, your posterior cervicals, because somehow that's going to fix it all. We are pathetic. Truly, we are pathetic. All that education in chiropractic school, and that's what we come up with? How about this? How about picture number 17? No, picture number 22. How about picture number 22? How about you get in one of those things and somebody pulls your head down? How about somebody wraps their hands around your head while you're hanging upside down and puts some downward pressure on there to pop occiput from C1, C2? Now, when I say something like that and I suggest it, I'm not suggesting that John Q's stupid, because we got those guys out there. I'm not suggesting John Q's stupid should go out, purchase one of those things, turn his head upside down, and experiment foolishly, with no discretion, with no discernment, with no respect for the incremental stages. Just like any gun owner would not buy a gun, go out and start shooting it without taking lessons. Just like any scuba diver would not go buy some oxygen tanks and just strap them on their back and go dunk themselves into the middle of the Atlantic. Okay? So let's respect the statements at hand here. Before we're going to think that we're going to separate occiput C1, C2 in a reasonable way, we're going to understand we need to train ourselves to the point where we can withstand and benefit from radical action. So when I talk about radical health, when I talk about radical steps for better cognitive function, that doesn't mean John Q. Stupid is supposed to just disrespect where he's at, disrespect the intensity of some of these maneuvers, and go out and hurt himself. Right? There is some idiotic notion in medicine that medical advice needs to protect you from yourself. You know what? That really is just a big excuse for don't tell anybody the truth. That's all it is. The lawyers love it. The truth is, because there's always one guy in the crowd that doesn't want to respect a process, you can't tell people the truth. You can't tell people, look, take the activator and stuff it. Get rid of it. Because you're going on the overall nowhere with it. Not in the long term. And get radical. If you can't say that because someone's going to go out and then disrespect the process and hurt themselves, well then, what's the truth? The truth is, you're never going to know the truth. Because of all sorts of irrationalities that circulate around modern day society and this mess we've created by giving people cliff note versions of health. So this is the context in which I use the word radical. You have to train yourself to the point. So if you got an inversion table, 21, you're not going to go upside down. You may be just a little bit down. And then you may improve it a little more, and then improve it a little more, and work yourself gradually. But if we don't give you the punchline, right? If I don't tell you, eventually you go upside down on that thing, whether it's an inversion table or one of those hang straps. If I don't tell you that eventually you do that, and then somebody really pulls your head and really pulls apart occiput C1, C2. If I don't give that to you, then along the way, you're going to get lost. Because you don't know where the critical mass point is. Now, I'm using the term critical mass. You cannot have health through any health task. You cannot develop a health practice. You cannot have a health ritual unless you understand and respect the term critical mass. Critical mass means you can do 1,000 enemas until you do a coffee enema and see bile in the toilet and get the relaxation response and get the chi flowing and get the positive uplifting benefit of releasing green smelly bile into a toilet. You aren't going to know what a coffee enema is really about, nor are you ever going to really experience the benefit of it. Our culture has become politically correct to the point where we have become incompetent. I suggest to you that political correctness go out of vogue and political incorrectness get back into the swing of things. Diseases, infections, cancers, they're not politically correct. They don't deserve politically correct approaches and critically correct vernaculars are not effective. So, using an inversion table to the point where you hit critical mass means you feel a massive effect inside your brain that tells you, because it will make you more clear-headed. It will enhance your memory. You will feel a mental shift. You will feel an improvement in cognitive function. When your occiput, your first and second cervical vertebrae are separated, whether it's on an inversion table, in a headstand, on a gumbali chair, or in one of those hang upside down, whatever you call these things. Picture 22. Gravity boots. However you do it, there's a critical mass point. Now, if you're thinking that you just go pull your head apart and not give any deference to the scalenes and the TMJ joint, you didn't listen to show 243 or show 244. There's no way you can talk about cognitive function without talking about the entire span of the body. So there are these critical mass points from your head to your toe, distributed across every major tendon in the body. And until that whole body can flip its switch to the on position, meaning until the joints can decompress, you're not going to get critical mass in those critical joints, in those absolutely essential joints that control brain function. Look at picture 14. Look at picture 14. Look at that suboccipital space. Look at all those muscles. And there's tons of muscle on top of that that I didn't put in there. Those muscles have to stretch out. You got to get all the muck and guck and end-chain glycation products out of there. You got to get cross-fibered through there. You got to get pulled through that area. You got to drop the fat out of the back of your neck. You got to find those places. You have to isolate them in the stretches. You're going to have to picture 18 there. You look at that guy's scalenes. You have to find that muscle. And this is what I mean by a health practice. Everything I've said to you since this show started today, I do regularly, easily, and rapidly as an animal. I use it in the interest of maintaining and improving my health. These are tools. These are allies against the adversity of the world. Life will swallow you. And you have to understand that you have tools at your disposal if you choose to employ them. And that is to the benefit of you and those that you care about. And this deal about getting in touch with the scalenes, the posterior cervicals, opening the TMJ joint and hitting the critical mass point in each and all of those exercises is something you learn. And the benefit is enormous, and you'll feel it as heat in the brain, warmth in the brain, flow in the brain. It will make you smarter. It will make you more coherent. It will bring you to a high level of cognition. You will feel younger. Believe me, I know what I'm talking about. Now, standing in the way of that is all the gook in your connective tissues, glycated end chain products, bonds between the amino acid strands that evolve out of high blood sugar. And that shift from the carbohydrate-driven high pre-diabetic state, and again, like I said in part one, most people go through their life diabetic or suffering from, you see this thill here? Look at picture one. Just look at picture one. This is glycated hemoglobin. They don't even run this test. I mean, they do, but you have to ask. It's pathetic. As medicine socializes, unless we stop it, no one's going to get these tests. You got to write to the commissioner to get a glycated hemoglobin. If you're in Kaiser Permanente, you do not get this test. They will tell you, you don't get the test unless the fasting blood glucose shows that you need this test. I mean, that's how bad it is. And Kaiser's just a globalist organization that's going to go the way of socialized medicine. They'll be part of it. You have to know about these tests. And then you have to hope that we can hold on to our constitution. So independent labs like Life Extension, like Request a Test, like Direct Labs, independent labs that'll go right to the public will prevail. And you can get these tests. You're going to have to get used to paying for them. You know, John Locke, free enterprise. It's what made the country great. Hopefully it sustains itself. Or it's going to be given to the megaliths like Kaiser and every other thing that idiot put in office. Right? Socialized medicine. Go to other countries. And ask smart people how they like their healthcare system. If they have any real intelligence about it, they're here in America at the Mayo Clinic. And don't make a mistake about that. So don't be afraid to go and pay. These tests are not expensive. But you want your HGBA1C done, and you want to be, you see how it says normal below 5.7? You want yours at 5.2, 5.9, not 5.5, 5.6, and oh, you're okay. 5.7 to 6.4 is pre-diabetes. Let me tell you something. If you're 5.7, 5.8, 5.9, you're getting sick, sick and sicker every day. And one of the things that happens when your blood sugar is not regulated correctly is you're sticky. You can't get the stretch. You can't separate your joints. The muscles are all plugged up. That's the problem. So to learn and to really start to experience your body with lower blood sugar. So like I said on the first half of the show, you're up there at about 80, 90. After you eat, an hour later, you should not be over 110. And it's a feeling. It's a feeling of strength, but it's a feeling of looseness, of flow. That's very different than when you've been sugaring out for months on end and you're all plugged up. So you can measure it, but really it's a feeling. And I'm always going to take you to that. You have to use your senses to heal. Without that, you don't stretch your muscles out. And all the high insulin and the high blood sugar, it rots the brain. Do I need to get technical? Sugar and high insulin create an alert to the immune system, which the consequence of which is the deposition of too much fibrin. That and thick, sticky blood combined lay down the format for plaque. All you need then in the presence of the blood sugar issue is fat, LDL. It oxidizes. It hits the arterial wall, and you're starting to plaque out the tiny arteries of the brain. Do that for 50 years and see how you feel at 70. And that's the problem. The micro arteries of the brain. I mean, blood supply to the brain? Oh my God. Arterial supply to the brain. When I used to dissect brain, 25 years ago, yeah, dissecting brains, brain after brain after brain. You just sit there and look at it and get lost in it. The vascular supply to the brain, it's like looking up at the stars at night in the country. It's infinite. 10, 20, 34 years of running your insulin high, your blood sugar high, you start oxidizing your fats. Fats get stickier and they cling to the inner arteries of the brain. That brain, with the vascular demand that the brain makes on the body, you cannot afford that deficit. You can't. And yet we have even no notion of it. Not to mention that the carotid arteries are often plaqued, and getting reality on that is, it's an art form. The problem is the standard of care creates these norms such that it's normal to have half or three quarters of your carotid artery plugged. The business of medicine is something you have to understand. The business of medicine is something you have to understand. It's just idiocy, but it's the way it works. If 10 million 70-year-old men have no plaque in their carotid arteries, then 20% plaque is considered a problem. You got that? But if those same group of men at age 70, normally speaking, have 70% plaque, then 50% plaque is okay and normal, and 60% plaque is okay and normal. The norms are made by the norms. This is what's so asinine. If everybody decides to sit down, bend over, and just rot out, then the numbers reflect that. And that's the business of medicine. You have to understand what an actuary is. You don't understand how insurance and how to cover costs is in deep bed. It's in bed. It is in deep reciprocity with what we call health. If everybody is going to get sick of something, we just adjust the costs to cover it. And therefore, getting sick is normal. So the numbers reflect that opinion that it's normal because it's covered. But this has nothing to do with health. So when we look at plaque in the brain and the microarteries, when we look at plaque in the carotids, the levels of it that are alarming by the time you're 70 or 60 are considered normal. And then, because of further insult to the healthcare system, if you want to get measured, if you want an MRI to see what your level of plaque is in the microvasculature relative to 5 years ago, you're going to get all the tests denied. It's bad, man. It's bad. That's why you listen to this show. So you don't get screwed, because you will be screwed. And what's different than that? Is there any area of inquiry that's not the same way? If you don't know, you get screwed. Look at picture 37. Look at picture 37. Look at that animal. Look at its armpits. You see how it's stretching? Look at its upper thoracic spine. You see how it's stretching? Look at its hams. Look at it. Its feet. You see how it's stretching? You see how the Dalmatian's jaw is open? That animal's having an orgasm through its body of pleasure. Of pleasure. That could be a lion. Look at picture 36. I think that's a leopard. Yeah, that's a leopard. It could be a cheetah, but I think it's a leopard. I don't know. Either way, it's a cat. It's a predator. Bottom line, it knows where the carotid artery is. It knows where the carotid is. Look at picture 35. That's a leopard. It's eating a smaller cat. Why do they always go for the neck? Because they know where the carotid artery is. They know they're masters at piercing it. I've watched documentaries on it. They know where the juice is. Look at picture 31. See that carotid coming up? You see where it forks out? See that little bulb there? That's your carotid sinus. That's what helps regulate your blood pressure. That fork is where you get your plaque. There's a carotid that goes to the left and one to the right. The one that goes to the right goes all the way into the interior of the brain, and the one on the left goes to your face. It's the external and internal carotids. That's where you choke somebody out. It's where you stab them in the throat. It's where the lion bites you in the neck. That's where people get plaque or don't get plaque. All the shows I've done on not getting plaque. In tomorrow's class, we're going to get into that. The cardiovascular cleanse is designed to make sure you don't get plaque. But if you want to dissolve your plaque and you can't stretch your scalenes, forget it. Oh, I said stretch the scalenes? You think I meant just go into the motion? No, I meant get the release. See the release. Look at picture 20. Picture 20, if you can do that, that's pretty good. But I want to know what you're feeling. Just because you can go into the motion, that doesn't mean anything's happening. You have to get the result. Okay? I'm going to keep hammering that into your heads. Don't you dare tell me I'm repetitive. Don't you dare. You tell me I'm repetitive, it's because you're just listening with your head. Once you connect these to your experience, you'll be happy I keep repeating it. Believe me. Picture 25, that's the Gambale chair, Dr. Gambale. Picture 26, that's Dr. Gambale's chair again. He's taken a shot. I think it's a credible shot at trying to get rid of this stinking Dowager's hump. Getting rid of a Dowager's hump is an event. That's a lot of work. You can do it. I've heavily reduced them in people, but they got to work at it. If you want to go from picture 27 to the girl on the right, left versus right, but you know, part of the BS of this picture is, pardon me, is she's just sitting up straight. I mean, that's a model that's demoing it. It's kind of a crock. But I'm telling you, you can do it. I've done it on maybe 5-6 people in my life. Nobody wants to do it. This is the problem with this Cliff Note version. Yeah, go buy a Gambale chair. Just lie there like a lump, and eventually you'll get the shift. Yeah, that's the way we sell it. The Gambale chair is a great facilitator of a process, but it's still a facilitator. It's not get it and that changes it. Hey, Fred, my head's too far forward. What should I do? Oh, buy a Gambale chair, Charlie. It's affordable. It's $900. It's affordable. Yeah. See, this is what we do. Everyone's in on this. I'm calling you all out on this. This is bullshit. Don't get me started on this. You're listening to this show. You may well be John Q. Public. You have no idea how screwed you're getting. And it's not necessarily because people are sitting there and they're mean, terrible people. Everybody wants to make a buck, including me. But the problem is, as far as holistic medicine is concerned, when you, the consumer, are suffering from something, you want resolution. If you put time, energy, and money in, it's because you want to see it cured. And what we're doing is we're exaggerating the claim, we're giving you a piece, and making it sound like it's gonna produce cure when it's just a little piece. That's the problem. That's why I talk this way. Because to my fellow practitioners, there's more money in it for everybody. If we just start jamming down the throat of your average American that they're going to need to make the time to work at this stuff. But we've bent over. And I'm sorry, we have. All of you, chiropractors, nutritionists, acupuncturists, yoga therapists, massage therapists, everybody has bent over. Why? Because you see, the model mirrors the AMA. Come in, get the service, and leave. I pay for my help. I found this really great doctor, I dipped real deep into my pocket, but what the hell? He was booked out 2 years. He was on Dr. Oz. I only go to the best. He told me what to do. I did it. It was amazing. You see, this is a crock. Remember James Bond? Right? Shows up to the bar, turns around, takes a look at a beautiful woman, cracks a few one-liners, and he's in bed with her, right? How often does that happen to you? You see? Lies. We build it on lies. So let's just not lie. Healing is a miracle. All these chiropractors, acupuncturists, massage, it's beautiful that they want to do this and help people, and then the schools lie to them. That's what they do. They lie. You brought in, you're lied to, you continue the lie in practice, then everybody gets together and lies to each other. We have one big hunk of lies. Where's the proofs then? If I'm wrong, where are the proofs? But it's beautiful. It's beautiful. Regulate your insulin. Learn to separate the joints, especially of the upper body. Get so separated, meaning decompressed in the joints, that you can begin to move bones back into the correct alignment. Last but not least, autophagy. Autophagy. Fasting. You know, of everything I've done, I mean, I've done a few things that have been, not a few, but a number of things that have been beyond description in terms of their significance. One of them is the water fast. There is nothing like it. Yeah, dry fasting too. Point is, water fasting. There's nothing like it. I've taken people who have failed at everything. I mean, they're so wound in their psyche. Nothing can get to them. Nothing. Nothing. No one. No way. You fast these people 3, 4, 5 days, they want to kill themselves. It gets them. It gets them to feel themselves. Fasts are powerful. Fasts are free. Fasting is an art form. Fasting requires discretion. Maybe you want to do it under supervision. Go pay someone that knows how to water fast to help you. Go pay your holistic medical doctor. I don't care what you do. Get hooked into the fast. This is why I have my classes. We've got one class. It's generally closed out. And everyone's starting to come in with case studies now. Their own case studies. And that's what I wanted. I wanted a bunch of people dedicated to getting healthy who would bring their stuff in and share. And we're doing it. Then I've got another class that's much, much bigger. And they're more the newbies. They're novices. And they're just trying to figure out the A's, B's, and C's. But I have always believed that you just need the right attitude and the data. We have fed you the wrong attitude. That's why you're so dependent on supervision. You don't have the right attitude. Most of your doctors spend more of their time just trying to evolve your attitude, deal with your ego. We should have had your ego conditioned from the beginning. That's how to make health cost-effective. What the top 10, 15, or 20 things on my website can do for your health is more than Sloan Kettering, UCLA, the Rockefeller Institute, and the Mayo Clinic put together. But my website fills itself with radical stuff, and then we've got this whole issue about, you know, how do you fast? And how do you do a coffee enema? And how do you do a gallbladder flush? And while all these things are true, honestly, It's these poorly conditioned perceptions of process. People's mindsets fight the healing. And this was the idea behind the classes, to get people sort of into the flow and out of poor mindsets, because then they can accelerate themselves. And we're doing it. We're succeeding at it. My website is a mess. I don't have the time, and I don't even really care. Who cares? Testimonials. Give me a break. I don't want people that are dumb enough to believe testimonials. Testimonials. All the energy we put into marketing, it's terrible. It's terrible. You want a testimonial? Come to my class. I got people that really work in these classes. They'll give you a testimonial in reality. You get what you pay for. You put into it, you'll get out of it. There's a testimonial. And then, yes, miracles are possible. Meaning, you can turn it around. I have a woman. I've got a couple of people I've done this with. Just a couple. Why? They did it. That's how bad it is. And that's okay. It's fascinating, no matter what. All right, I think that's it. You know, this thing about paleo versus vegetarian, it doesn't matter. Just keep your blood sugar low. The fats, the quality of the fats, another critical piece in this brain issue. The quality of the fats. Moving the blood with interval training. Another big key. Interval training. Whatever you hit, whether it's an elliptical, stair climber, swimming in the ocean, swimming in a pool, jumping rope, walking up a hill, mountain climbing, rock climbing, you got to have a watch on. You're looking at the watch and you're going to see your heart rate up at 150, 160, 170. You got to sustain that 20 to 30 seconds. Then you rest, then you go back to it. Then you rest, then you go back to it. It's got to go 30 minutes, 3-4 times a week. That sends charged blood to your brain. That's a big one. Do that with low blood sugar. Get the high off that. The paleo-vegetarian thing is kind of irrelevant. You want low oxidative, high macronutrient food. And then listen to your body. Why is that complicated? Why do we have 19,000 different books? It's because we have poorly conditioned perspectives. You bring you right back to the same thing. Look at picture 8. Brian Clement. I love Brian Clement. New York guy. I didn't know he was an NMD. You know, he's got all these like weekend courses, things. I don't care. He's the real thing. You know, he didn't bust it out in pre-med. I guarantee you that. Not that that's such a big, you know, medal to wear. But it's not exactly what you call hard science. Neither is a lot of what I tell you, because there is no hard science. It's called empiricism. It works. Do it and listen. It works. You know how much of hard science lives by that norm? You don't realize that. There's picture 9, Gabriel Cousins. He's a cohort of Clement. These are the vegan vegetarian types. Great. Just show the results. Then there's the keto people. Then there's Ogenus, primal. It doesn't really matter. Just make sure you hit critical mass and measure. That's the concept. Without that, we're lost. Don't be lost. All right, I can take a few for my February 24th class. The other one, no. 714-850-1007. Get part of the club and learn gradually over time. No pressure. We hold these classes every 6 weeks. Do it now. 714-850-1007. Those of you with issues, health concerns, you want to engage, you've got the number. I'll put you on the right track. You get to work. A lot more personal supervision. But it comes down to the same principles. All right, that's it for today. I'll post this shortly. God bless you, and we'll see you next week.